I do not fear death. I am alone, imprisoned by the Zednai, a race long since dead. The hands that bound me here lay rotting at my feet. Every room, every corridor in this city echoes with the ghosts of captors and prisoners alike. When the Zednai breathed their last, when the virus I carried had done its work, there was hope. There was singing. There was joy. But not for long. In time, my fellow prisoners realized we had been abandoned, presumed lost, forgotten. The joy turned to despair, despair to defeat, and finally, silence. These machines, designed to torture me, are keeping me alive. For so long now. Weeks, months, maybe years. What I once thought a blessing is now a curse. My body is old now. Too old to break my bonds, too old to cry for help. But the doctor's people have denied me the one thing I long for more than anything else. I do not fear death. I ache for it. Things in the dark. I see shadows move, feel the brush of air on my cheek, and then there is nothing, only the silence. Hello? I can hear you. Do not cry. Do not be afraid. There is nothing to fear. Nothing to fear, young one. I have stories to tell you. So many stories. Stories passed down through generations of the Sevatim and others. I once knew a warrior. His name was the Doctor. I only once saw him truly afraid. TARDIS was burning. Flames rose from the wooden table in the middle of the room and fanned outwards, swallowing the ceiling and walls so that we could see nothing but fire and smoke. Doctor, we must do something, I cried. Doctor!
I can't move.
The doctor stood paralyzed, his face knotted with fear. As the ceiling started to fall around us, I pulled him through the flames, knowing there was a door a few steps to our right. Wait, the doctor leapt towards the table and, using his scarf to protect his fingers from the heat, stabbed a couple of buttons.
Now, Leela, out.
We ran through the doorway, slamming it shut only seconds before a loud roar filled the burning room. Then there was silence.
What did you do?
I asked. I removed the oxygen from the console room, he replied, fingering the burnt edges of his scarf thoughtfully.
Suffocated the fire.
Once again, I saw fear flicker across his face.
Doctor, why are you afraid?
For a moment, he seemed about to protest, but then he sighed and, his voice lowered almost to a whisper, looked into my eyes.
A long time ago, I saw a whole planet burn, Leela. A mighty civilization literally going up in smoke. death on an almost inconceivable scale. So huge, so inexorable, that I was powerless to stop it. Millions of people died, and all I could do was watch. "It is good to know what we fear," I said. "Only when we have faced it can we truly be warriors." The doctor nodded and pulled open the door he had been leaning against. The whole room was destroyed. The walls black and bent strangely out of shape. The central table a skeleton of what it had been. Strange lights glowed from within it like dying embers. The doctor's eyes widened. "Oh dear," he said. Then, striding towards the still smouldering steps, brightly added, "Shall we go for a spot of fresh air?"
"What?"
"We've landed. Might be nice to find out where, don't you think?"
"But what about the machine? The TARDIS?"
"Don't worry about that. Plenty of other console rooms." Amazed at the doctor's sudden change of mood, I followed him out of the TARDIS and onto another world. Sunshine dazzled me after the blackness of the room we had left. As I grew accustomed to it, I saw that we were standing in a large square which was alive with sound and movement. Small glowing lights danced like insects above hundreds of people. Though nobody seemed to have noticed us, I felt as if everyone's eyes were upon us. And something else was wrong. I felt it as soon as I stepped out of the TARDIS.
"What is it, Leela?"
the doctor asked.
"Everyone looks happy."
"Maybe they are happy."
"No, that is not possible. I do not feel safe here. What are these people doing?"
"Shopping, mostly, by the look of it."
"Shopping?"
"Yes, Leela. It's a market. Those are market stalls. They're traders. They're exchanging items for money."
"Money?"
The doctor shrugged.
"Never mind."
I looked closer at the traders. They were exchanging a variety of objects. Exotic fruits, creatures and birds, alive and dead. Shining alien stones, paintings, cloths, animal hides, even weapons.
"Ah, I understand," I said. "The blue ones behind the stalls are making offerings. This money must be a powerful god to have so many servants."
"Blue ones?"
"All the traders have blue skin." "Is that a Distrabicon?"
I pointed to a large object standing in the middle of the square.
"A what?"
"A Distrabicon. A symbol of power for the gods that protect this tribe."
"Oh, you mean a totem pole,"
the doctor replied.
"I doubt it. It's probably modern art. The pattern seems familiar, but I can't quite place it."
Made of metal, three smooth round globes were connected by winding tubes which swayed in the breeze. The doctor frowned, then, looking upwards at the buildings surrounding the square, gasped with delight.
"Paxus Majoritas,"
he cried, beaming.
"This is the capital city of Synchronis. No wonder everyone's happy, Leela. I've always wanted to come here, but never had the opportunity. It's a protected world, you see. No visitors allowed. Well done, old girl."
Patting the TARDIS, the doctor explained to me about Synchronis. A world where there was no war, no hunger, no poverty, only
peace, harmony, and magnificent architecture.
He pointed towards the Palace of Inner Tranquility, which towered above us, its gleaming golden roof only just visible through the clouds.
"But that's not all. Come on."
The doctor smiled, pulling me through the crowds and up onto the steps that led from the square up to the palace. When we had climbed enough steps to take us above the market stalls, he stopped and pointed towards the horizon.
"There we are, Leela. One of the 700 wonders of the universe. The waters of empathy."
"I see no water. I see only buildings and sky."
The doctor's smile did not falter. If anything, it became wider.
"That isn't sky, Leela. It's water. The largest water sculpture ever constructed."
I looked again and saw that he was right. The sky, a brilliant white streaked with blue and green, was moving like a huge waterfall, going upwards instead of down.
The shapes I had taken for clouds were actually enormous balls of foam floating away from the water and across the roof of a large dark building on the horizon.
What is that place?
I asked the doctor, shuddering.
Ah, well, if I'm right, those are the buildings of stability,
he replied.
In there are the massive gravitational devices that keep the water up.
I bit my lip thoughtfully.
The waters of empathy are controlled by machines. Then they are not a wonder of the universe. They are as unnatural as the people of this world.
Suddenly, below us, an alarm rang out across the marketplace. Strangely calm and without a word, the people abandoned their stalls and goods and walked into the buildings in neat lines. Soon the square was empty. As we reached the bottom step, I unsheathed my knife. The doctor scowled.
There is danger here,
I protested. And when the doctor shook his head, added,
Then why has everyone gone into the buildings? Maybe it's time for tea,
the doctor shrugged. I span round, sensing movement behind a stall to our left.
Do not move, Doctor. There is something here in the square with us. I can smell its fear.
Moving silently, close to the ground, just as I was taught as a child, I padded towards the creature whose shallow breaths I could now hear behind the stall. The doctor watched me getting nearer, nearer. Just as I was about to strike, one of the stalls toppled to the ground.
Looks like a chicken to me,
the doctor called out. And then he was knocked to the ground as the creature leapt out of the shadows and onto his back. Half the size of the doctor, its muscular arms gleamed with sweat as they tore at his jacket, ripping it into shreds with sharp claws. It roared with anger, spittle flying into the air as it shook its dirty, hairless head before diving downwards to its victim's exposed flesh. Matching its battle cry with my own, I jumped forward and pulled it away before it had a chance to bite. Its cold blue eyes glared at me fiercely as I plunged my knife towards its heart. Then, with another roar, it batted my weapon away. Talons shining, it leapt on top of me and I fell backwards. For a moment I tasted its hideous breath hot on my face, felt its shoulders tense to deliver a killing blow. Then I rolled over and kicked it with all my strength, dazing it for enough seconds for me to retrieve my knife. But as my fingers clasped the handle, a flash of light from above distracted me. The sunlight was bouncing off an open window high in one of the buildings where a small figure was leaning out to watch us. It was a child. And for a moment, nothing more. The cool night wind of Mount Kremlon was ruffling my hair. My fingers were dripping with blood. My lips were wet with tears. Then I felt the creature's gnarled foot on my neck and heard a bone beginning to crack. First there were colours. Changing colours. Reds, blues, oranges, which swam around me and into me. Then, gradually, I woke in a room with white walls and a large window that stretched from the floor to the ceiling. I was in a building high above the market square, lying on a bed with cool sheets. My neck was supported by soft pillows. Sunlight poured in through the window, reflected off the distant water, sending rain-like patterns shimmering across the ceiling. I felt calm, at peace, and different. Something had changed within me. I did not know what exactly. Closing my eyes again, I was about to fall asleep when I sensed someone else in the room. My hand reached instinctively for my knife, but it was not there.
Please, don't be alarmed.
A tall man with a white beard and dark eyes walked towards my bed.
Where is my knife?
Your knife? Oh, you mean your hand weapon, of course. I'm afraid we've had to confiscate that. We don't allow weaponry within the city boundaries.
You are lying.
Come on.
Yes,
I saw weapons exchanged by the market traders.
Did you? Yes, well, they're strictly ornamental. Nobody would ever use them in combat, not here.
Then why have them?
I don't know, really. Maybe as a reminder of darker times.
That is stupid.
Yes, it probably is. Why remind ourselves of darker times when we can celebrate all that is good today? Audie, please forgive me. I haven't introduced myself. I'm Coordinator Angel. And you are?
I am Leela of the Sevateem.
Really? Is that one of the Outer Islands?
The Sevateem is my tribe.
Your tribe? Oh, you mean your family, I see.
What is this place? Where is the doctor?
This is the Palace of Tranquility. There will be a doctor to see you presently, but first...
I mean, where is the doctor, my friend?
You mean the gentleman in the square. He is recovering slowly, but stable.
Recovering? I must go to him. I tried to move, but found that I was held back by straps around my shoulders. I felt a sudden pain in the back of my head.
Please, Miss Sevateem, don't move just yet. The process isn't quite complete.
Process? What process?
The recovery process. You've sustained a number of injuries.
Let me out of here!
Of course we will, when you're better. Goodness, they were right about you.
Who was? What do you mean?
The observational said you'd put up quite a fight. Very impressive, they said. But I have to confess that when I saw you... Well, you don't look like a cathartic.
What? I do not understand you.
You really are from one of the Outer Islands, aren't you? How very interesting. How did you get to the mainland? I had no idea the Outers had developed that kind of Tell me, are there more of you here?
No. Just me and the doctor. Now, release me and let me see him.
Of course, my dear Miss Sevateem.
My name is Leela.
Leela. I assure you that your recovery will be given top priority. If it's true what the observational said about you, I think I might have a little job for you.
I will do nothing until I am released and can see the doctor.
Yes, yes, of course. He's in safe hands, I promise you. After all, where could be safer than the Palace of Tranquility? But of course, you shall see him as soon as you're better. Ah, Dr. Mason, I wonder if I might have a word about Miss Leela's treatment.
As he talked to the woman by the door, I felt my eyes grow heavy again and my body start to feel warm. Despite my efforts to stay awake, I was soon asleep. When I woke, the room was in darkness. For a moment, I was confused. Again, I felt different, as if something was missing. Then, remembering where I was, I moved my shoulders slowly, expecting to still be restrained, but was not. Careful to make no noise, I sat up and slid off the bed. My eyes soon grew accustomed to the darkness. The reflection on the walls and ceiling were a different shape and colour now. Looking out of the window, I saw why. Two moons shone brightly in the sky. Walking across to the door, I listened for movement outside and heard none. I tried to push open the door, but it would not give way.
Open!
I pushed harder.
Great, Zoannon! Open!
Oh! The door opened to reveal a small girl dressed in white, holding a metal tray and looking very surprised to see me. Her hair was as black as night, and her skin was deep blue.
I thought you was... I mean, you're supposed to be asleep.
Well, I'm not. Where is the doctor?
Ain't no doctors on this floor at night. Only the orderlies, like me.
I mean my friend.
Oh, yeah, of course you do. They said you said he was a doctor, but no one believed you, did they? You being from the Outer Islands and that.
I am not from an island, nor am I a cathartic, or...
Well, of course you ain't a cathartic. Anyone can tell that.
Where is the doctor?
Next room. Take me to him.
I don't know much. She grabbed her arm and, twisting it behind her back, thrust her face into the wall.
Take me to him or I will break your...
To my surprise, the girl punched me in the stomach, forcing me to release my grip. Then with lightning speed, turned to pin me to the ground with her other arm.
I don't think you will, Miss Outer Islander.
My name is Leela
And you are a warrior.
Of course I am. I'm a cathartic, innit? Born to it. Now, are you going to behave if I let you go?
Yes, I will behave.
Go back to bed?
Yes.
Good.
As she released her grip, I grabbed the tray she had dropped and hit the side of her head with it. She fell to the floor.
A true warrior knows never to trust the word of their enemy, Blue One.
I stepped over her body and towards the door to the next room. On the wall beside it was a panel with a large red button. Guessing, I pressed it and the door slid open. The doctor, still and silent, lay on a bed in the middle of the room, his shoulders restrained as mine had been, and behind him on the wall, three large globes. They were smooth, silver, connected by tubes that glowed first orange, then blue. I recognized the shape. It was the same one I had seen in the market square. One of the tubes was connected to the back of the doctor's head.
Oh!
Remembering the pain I had felt the day before, I realized that I too must have been connected to the metal globes.
Doctor,
I whispered,
wake up.
The doctor did not move. Kneeling beside him, I touched his face, which was as cold as ice.
Doctor?
Nothing. I reached for his hand. It was as cold as his face. Leaning over him, I felt no breath, no movement at all. The doctor was dead. When an elder of the tribe of Sevatim died, it was a custom to guard the body against the evil spirits of the night, to protect the soul until the first hours of sunlight. I had done it before on Mount Kremnon. I would do it now. And in the morning, I would hunt down the doctor's killers and enact a just and bloody revenge.
Interesting.
Suddenly awake, I leapt to my feet.
Please don't do anything rash. I have absolutely no intention of harming you.
Was it you? Was it you who killed him?
Killed who? I haven't killed
the
anyone.
The doctor!
The doctor? You mean your friend? He's alive, my dear.
You lie. He's dead.
No. I know it might look like that. I know the life signs are very weak, but I assure you, they are there. He's alive.
What? What have you done to him?
More to the point, what have you done to my orderly? Actually, there's no need to answer that. My observationals told me the whole story in the lift. You're turning out to be quite a catch, Miss Leela. Just proves that we should never judge a person by the hue of their
what
skin.
What have you done to the doctor?
We haven't done anything at all to him, aside from some very basic medication, of course. No, this coma of his would appear to be entirely self-induced. My medical team is baffled. Tell me, is this typical of your whole whole tribe?
The doctor does not belong to my tribe. He is a Time Lord.
Oh, is he indeed?
And if you do not release him...
The doctor's face suddenly hardened. His eyebrows and hair turning white. His lips blue.
Doctor!
Fascinating.
Remove this machine now.
My dear Leela, the equipment has absolutely nothing to do with the doctor's condition, as I've already told you. If anything, it's keeping him alive. The rodent did a fair bit of damage to him before you distracted it.
The rodent? The creature that attacked us?
Yes, that's right. Look, why don't we go to my suite? You must be hungry. I can organize some breakfast.
I will not leave him.
He'll be perfectly all right.
I will not...
I hate to threaten you, but...
I thought you said that no weapons were allowed here.
I am the coordinator. I make the rules so I can break them. Now, come along.
I will not leave the doctor.
Leela.
Then shoot me. Do it if you have the courage.
You don't think I would? Of course you don't. I'm a Synchronian. We abhor violence. That's what you've heard, haven't you? There is no violence here. No murder, no war, no hunger, no poverty. So why am I carrying a gun?
Because you are afraid.
What is there to fear on Synchronis?
You fear me. If you did not, you would not be threatening me with a gun.
I like you, Leela. And as I said, I have a job for you. I want you to represent me at the Empathy Games. You may not have been born a cathartic, but if there's anyone I want to see battle my city's rodents, it's you.
First you threaten to kill me, and then you ask me to fight your battles. I do not understand you, and I will not fight for you.
The training begins at the end of the primary moon cycle. By then, your doctor should be stable at the very least, if not fully recovered. I shall expect to see you at the stadium. In the meantime, I shall have your breakfast delivered here on a tray.
I looked down at the doctor's whitened face, willing him to breathe, to live. But still there was no movement.
Be patient, Leela.
Doctor? His lips had not moved, but I had heard his voice as clearly as the old man's.
Wait for me. Wait.
Six days later, the doctor's condition had not changed, and I was becoming bored. Every day the sun rose, making the distant waters of Empathy glow first red, then orange, then white. Every day the market traders below us made offerings to their gods. Every day the sun set to be replaced by the moon's, and every day the blue-skinned girl brought me food. Despite our introduction, she bore me no malice. Her name was Bikora Kitran. She was the eldest of three sisters, all worked in this place of healing, the Palace of Tranquility. Bikora spent her days carrying trays from one floor to another, sometimes with food, sometimes with pieces of paper, sometimes with nothing. She made no complaint. This, she said, was her life. When I asked her whether she ever dreamed of life out of the palace, of what lay beyond the water, of the outer islands, even other worlds, she laughed. Why would anyone want to go out beyond the water, she asked, when we have everything what we need here? And there ain't nothing there anyways. Just desert. Miles and miles of sand. Nothing. On the seventh night, the sky seemed darker. One of the moons had been swallowed. Bikora told me that the primary moon cycle had ended, and I remembered the coordinator's offer.
You did what?
I refused.
You refused to represent the coordinator? Are you mad? That's the greatest honour anyone could imagine. I'd die to rep... What did he say?
He came back the next day and repeated the offer, and I refused again.
Then you're an idiot.
I am not.
Yes, you are. Imagine hunting the coordinator's rodents. It's like... You'd be a hero.
What are these creatures? The rodents?
You must know what the rodents are.
If I knew, I would not ask. They live in the pit. Whole load of tunnels under the city. They're savages, vermin, lowest of the low. Every year during the games, we get to wipe them out. The cathartics, I mean.
You hunt them?
Yeah. They open up the pit. The entrance to the tunnels, and we go down there and hunt.
Yeah.
To the death?
Of course.
No point otherwise.
And the coordinator owns these rodents, the ones he wanted me to hunt?
Not exactly. There are thousands of them. Every cathartic gets to hunt a whole load of them. I looked at Bikora, marvelling at the courage of this little blue-skinned girl who spent the rest of her year carrying trays around a palace. The training for these games begins today, I asked. She nodded. Then I shall join you. The training took place in the stadium, a large dome at the base of the Waters of Empathy. There were about 50 of us, all, like Bikora, small and blue-skinned. When I first saw them standing in their neat lines, I laughed.
This is your army?
I whispered to Bikora.
These are your hunters and slayers? The rodents will feast well in the games.
Bikora did not protest, but laughed with me. I came to regret my words. The training was basic, little more than a series of games that Thomas and I might have played when we were children. We hunted kuhata,
small grey animals whose hides I had seen hanging in the market. We fought hand to hand, both unarmed and with the knives and spears that the old man had claimed were ornamental. And throughout, despite their size, the cathartic showed strength and skill to rival the best of the 17. My friend Bakora, the arrogant Patenga, the meek Gachana, the joker Batobin, they all accepted me without question, despite my lack of knowledge of their customs or the colour of my skin. On the final day, we were gathered outside the dome, next to a large pool of water. The pool was connected to another higher pool by a narrow river, and that to another, even higher and larger. A cloud of mist rose from the highest pool, and from this the mighty waters of empathy shimmering in the light of the sun. One by one we were placed on the smooth rocks at the water's edge, connected by narrow streams. As the cathartics chattered in nervous excitement, I looked down at the water trickling slowly along the streams. It curled around Bakora's rock at my side.
"I know this shape," I said. "I saw it in the doctor's room, and before that, in the marketplace."
"It's a sacred symbol,"
she replied in a whisper.
"The helix of Synchronis, an ancient sign of peace and prosperity."
"Then I was right. It is a distrabe, Connie."
"A what?"
"A totem pole."
The air around us grew warm as a metal machine fell from the sky, coming to land gently at the edge of the dome. The cathartic stopped talking. A door in the side of the machine opened, and the old man stepped out.
"Honored cathartics. Honored honorary cathartic. The empathy games are almost upon us, and I, for one, have great hopes that these will be the most productive and enthralling yet. My observationals have spoken glowingly of the courage and determination you've shown during your training, and I'm sure that you will all face this final stage with the hope and valour we, the people of Synchronis, have come to expect of you. Honoured cathartics, let the selection begin."
"Selection? This is where our rodents are assigned. Good luck, Leela. Good luck. What am I supposed to do?"
The ground suddenly started to shake. The sky seemed to darken as the mist above the highest pool spread outwards, blocking out the sunlight. The water at our feet flowed faster, glowing blue, orange. I felt heavy, as if I was being pulled downwards. I tried to move, tried to call out to Bakora, but could do neither. The sound of the water deafened me. I felt it rise up my body, swallowing me. Blocking out the sunlight. The water at our feet flowed faster, glowing blue, orange. I felt heavy, as if I was being pulled downwards. I tried to move, tried to call out to Bakora, but could do neither. The sound of the water deafened me. I felt it rise up my body, swallowing me. And then... "Is anyone..." I was still standing at the side of the dome, but everything had changed. The glowing mist had gone, replaced by a strange darkness. A world of shadows in which nothing was moving. I could see Bakora, her face twisted into a silent scream. All around me, the cathartics stood on their rocks, not moving, terrified. And in front of us, lit by insects glowing red in the darkness, the old man's eyes staring at me, into me.
I need you to survive this, Leela Savatine. I need you to live, to fight. I've elected you. Don't fail me now.
What am I supposed to do?
Concentrate. Listen to what the water is telling you. Look at what it is showing.
I hear nothing. I see nothing. Only the pools and the cathartic.
Concentrate, Leela. Look beyond them. Find your prey.
What is that?
That's it. You found one. Concentrate, Leela. Complete the link. Concentrate.
The shadows around me started to move, to take different shapes. Soon I could no longer see Bakora and the pools, no longer feel the water on my skin. I was underground. Reaching out, I could touch cold stone walls, smell animal hide and hear. Getting closer, I could hear. So close. I could hear, could feel, could taste. I lifted my hand and saw that it was covered in hair. That my nails had grown longer. I looked down and saw not my own body, but the squat shape of a rodent. What have you done to me?
Nothing. I've done nothing. This isn't you.
You have turned me into a rodent.
No, no. You completed the telepathic link with one of your prey. It isn't you, Leela.
I...
But now you will know exactly where the rodent is in the tunnels, where it's hiding, and not just that one. Move on, Leela. Find more of them.
And that is how it began. I do not know how long I swam among the shadows or how many rodents' minds I entered, nor do I understand how I was able to do such a thing. But with each one, I reached further inside until I was able to see not only their hiding place, but feel their hunger, their anger, their despair. And as I travelled from mind to mind, I understood that our training had been a mere preparation for this, the true skill of the hunt. And then the screaming began. As swiftly as I had entered the shadow world, I left it and stood once again at the side of the dome. But now the cathartics had halved in number. All that remained of the other half were piles of smouldering ashes.
What has happened to them? Patenga, Batobin, Kachana.
They failed the selection.
Bakora stood trembling, but alive, by my side.
Not everyone can survive the water. Drives them mad first.
Stop this!
The selection is at an end. You've done well, honored cathartics, and you, Leela, my elected representative, have proven my choice a wise one. People of Synchronis, I give you the coordinator's champion.
The giant dome split down the middle, the two halves dividing to reveal a massive crowd, all cheering their approval. As one, we, the survivors of the selection, stepped down from our rocks and onto a metal pathway that extended towards us from the center of the stadium. Then the pathway moved, carrying us through the air and through a short, dark stone tunnel at the edge of the dome. Inside the stadium, we moved onwards towards a platform that was surrounded by a rushing fountain of water. Once we were there, the crowd grew silent, and the old man appeared in a box at the same height as us at the side of the stadium. A thousand faces turned to look at him.
Let the end of the games begin. Open the pit.
Below us, the ground cracked and fell apart, revealing a huge, dark cavern mouth. I felt Bakora's hand reach for mine.
Do not be afraid,
I whispered, but looking at her face, knew that my words were wasted. our platform shuddered and began its descent into the pit. To a rest deep underground in a small cave. As it did, the ceiling slid back into place, cutting out the sunlight. The cave was lit by the strange red insect lights that floated in the air above us, darting from side to side as we moved. Tunnels led off on every side. Beside each entrance lay a pile of the weapons we had trained with. I was the first to arm myself. As soon as I had done so, the others grabbed knives and spears and ran off down the tunnels.
"We must stay together," I shouted after them. "Protect each other. Hunt as a pack. Come back."
But they ignored me. Bakora was the last to leave, pausing to turn and look at me.
"Bakora, will you not join me?"
I asked her. She looked nervously up at the dancing lights. "I can't," she said. "Sorry. I just can't." Suddenly her eyes whitened and her face became pale and tense.
"Bakora, what is wrong?"
She seemed not to see me, turning towards one of the tunnels.
"It weren't my fault."
"What was not your fault?"
"He knew the risks. I warned him before we started, told him to hold back. Bide his time, stubborn old fool."
"Bakora, who are you talking about?"
"I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him."
"Kill who?" Suddenly a rodent leapt out of the shadows, knocking Bakora to the ground. The dancing lights formed a circle above us, and then they seemed to speak.
"Citizens of Synchronis, our first catch."
The rodent had pinned Bakora's head to the ground and was about to plunge his teeth into her neck.
"I didn't kill him."
I grabbed a spear and flung it through the creature's head. For a moment it seemed to hang in midair. Then it fell to the ground by Bakora's side.
"Foul move. 6 penalty points to Bakora of Kitran and 6 to the Coordinator's champion."
I held out my hand to Bakora, but she refused to take it, stumbling to her feet without my help.
"Now look what you've done. You've ruined it. I could have had the first kill of the games. Get away from me."
Picking up a spear and a knife, she ran into a tunnel, followed by 3 dancing lights.
"Bakora!"
I shouted after her. But there was no answer. The dead rodent lay at my feet. Its face was different to the one that had attacked us in the square, more human. It had greying hair and a short, fat neck, which, as I watched, was lengthening. The hair was falling away, the eyes and nose becoming less human. Within seconds, the rodent had become as bald and animal-like as the other one. Suddenly my vision clouded, and I had the same sensation that I had felt at the selection. Used to it now, I concentrated and saw through the eyes of another. My first prey. I was running along a tunnel away from what? No, towards something, towards the light. The warrior in the light. No, I was alone. Alone on a mountainside. My hands were covered in blood, my lips salty with tears. I felt alone, so alone and afraid. And then I was back in the cave. I saw the rodent, the same rodent whose mind I had just entered, moving in the shadows. I knew what I must do. As fast as I could, I reached for another spear. As I did, the rodent leapt into the light. And with horror, I realized that I was looking into my own face.
"Citizens of Synchronis, the champion's first catch."
We stood staring at each other, one remaining dancing light swaying from side to side above us. The rodent with my face snarled, revealing a vicious set of teeth, and then, when I did not respond, its jaws moved, slowly forming words.
"Why do you not fight? Fight! Fight!"
"Citizens of Synchronis, we've got a talker."
"Kill me!"
"Why must I kill you?"
"Because you hate me. You fear me."
"I do not.
I fear nothing, liar. Kill me. Slay me."
"Why do you have my face?
Without answering, the rodent leapt onto me, its eyes blazing, its claws extended, and we fought. Though the creature was strong, I was stronger. I soon had the advantage and sat astride her, my spear ready to deliver a fatal blow.
Do it, Leela. Do it!
I raised the spear, the rodent struggling and spitting below me, and then threw it at the dancing light, which exploded into a thousand pieces. The cave was dark and silent, apart from the fevered breathing of the rodent.
Why did you not kill me?
You are not my enemy. You begged me to kill you. There is no honour in killing if one's prey wishes to die. The people who make us fight without honour are our enemy. The cave glowed red as two of the dancing lights flew into it.
Coordinator's champion, you have made an illegal move and you are eliminated from the games. Immediate disintegration authorized.
I rolled to the side of the cave, avoiding a blinding beam of light that blasted a hole in the wall. Picking up another spear, I destroyed one light, and then the other exploded, destroyed in the same way by the rodent.
Good!
I shouted.
Now come with me and we shall gather together an army.
Minutes later, we ran into another cave. On one wall, waterfalls glowed with beams of sunshine that fell from holes in the ceiling. Bakora was standing over the dead body of a rodent. I called her name, but she did not respond, staring down at the rodent's face, her own face, slowly melting away into the familiar, hairless animal, just as the other had done.
Bakora,
I said again. And this time she looked up at me, her expression hard.
That is my fourth kill.
Why did it have your face, Bakora? Why did the rodent I fought have...
Leela!
The rodent with my face flew through the air towards me with a roar. I stepped aside, but it caught my shoulder, digging its claws into my skin. Once again, we fell to the ground, fighting, until suddenly it screamed in pain and loosened its grip. Bakora had stabbed its leg with her knife. She threw her spear over to me.
What are you waiting for?
She cried.
It's your catch, Leela. Kill it!
I shook my head, threw the spear aside and took hold of my rodent's neck.
Listen to me. Are you listening? I have spared your life twice. I shall not do it again. If you do not fight by my side, rodent, I shall slay you. Do not doubt it.
Bakora glared at me.
Why don't you kill it?
I do not kill for sport, Bakora.
Then why did you train to become a cathartic? Why did you agree to be the coordinator's champion?
You said that the rodents were animals, vermin.
Look at it. It has a face. It has my face. And it understands my words. It talked to me.
You got a talker? Bakora sneered at the rodent, who was licking her wounds, blood trickling down her chin as she looked up at us with my eyes.
Then you should definitely have killed it. It's a freak.
A new sound filled the cave.
What is that?
They've terminated the games. Probably because of you.
Bakora ran towards the tunnel as several dancing lights appeared at the other end of the cave, followed by cathartics and rodents, some engaged in battle, some screaming, some simply running. I helped my rodent to her feet. Bakora turned.
Leave it, Leela. They'll fill the pit with gas. Kill them all that way. We've got to get out of here before...
A massive wave of water knocked Bakora off her feet and smashed her into a wall. As she hit it, I saw her neck break. Then her lifeless body was tossed towards us on the crest of the wave. With no time to mourn her passing, I grabbed my rodent's arm and, as the wave hit us, let it carry us towards the waterfall. Twisting our bodies, we were able to hit the rock wall feet first. Then, guiding each other, we swam as one towards the gaps in the ceiling. Bursting through a hole in the rock, we were thrown into the air and landed painfully in the middle of the stadium. Around us, the crowd was screaming, panicking. Rodents swarmed out of the pit, some flung through holes as we had been, some climbing out of the entrance, now no longer a deep hole but another lake, filled with debris and floating bodies. The sky was dark. The ground shook.
Ah, there you are, Leela.
To my surprise, I looked up into the smiling face of the doctor.
What is happening?
I cried.
I'm not entirely sure,
he replied, looking curiously at my rodent.
Of course you know what's happening.
The old man walked towards us, holding a gun.
My observationals told me all about your act of sabotage.
Oh, did they?
Said the doctor.
How exactly? No, don't tell me. You have a telepathic relationship, am I right?
Two of the dancing lights buzzed around the old man's head.
Yes. Well,
the doctor continued.
That wasn't sabotage exactly, more a bit of an accident. I was still a little numb from the coma. Must have tripped the wrong wire.
A rumbling filled the air. Large cracks appeared in the ground. The waters of empathy roared angrily above us. The sky filled with dark, thunderous clouds. The roof of the dome seemed to be buckling slightly under the weight of the water raining down upon it. A cold wind wailed in through the entrance tunnels, knocking Synchronians off their feet as they ran for their lives.
You caused this to happen?
I asked the doctor. He explained that he had woken up, seen me and the games being shown on screens through the city, and decided to rescue me from the pit. To do this, he said, he would have to
disable the observationals,
the dancing lights, by
modifying the city's central nervous system
with his sonic screwdriver. I was none the wiser.
You're lying. Your deliberate act of sabotage has destroyed us, and there's only one punishment fitting such a crime.
My rodent leapt towards the old man's arm, sending his gun flying, and together we pinned him to the floor. She looked ready to devour him, her teeth bared, but I shook my head and held her back.
The doctor does not lie,
I said as he looked up in terror.
If he says it was an accident, then it was an accident.
My rodent snarled in agreement.
Accident or not, it's the end of our civilization.
Oh, rubbish,
the doctor cried.
The feedback pulse might have caused a temporary fluctuation in the gravitational field, but we can soon put that right at the buildings of stability. All this might seem quite dramatic, but as long as we get there within, 20 minutes... The worst your city will have to complain about are a couple of unseasonal rain showers and some overwatered lawns.
You flooded the pit!
The doctor's face darkened.
Ah, yes, the pit. We must have words about that when all this is sorted out.
In any case, I wasn't talking about the waters, I was talking about them.
The old man nodded towards my rodent, who bore her teeth in reply.
Thanks to you, they're running riot, killing my people, destroying the city.
The doctor shook his head.
I don't think so,
he said, studying the chaos in the stadium.
If you watch them, really watch what's going on, I mean, you'll see that they're only acting in self-defense. They're scaring a lot of people, yes, but they seem to have something else on their mind. They're all heading somewhere in particular. As far as I can tell, your people are just getting in their way. Anyway, we've got work to do. Let him up, Leela.
Are you sure?
Yes. We need to get to the buildings of stability, and he's going to give us a lift.
Pointing to the old man's metal machine outside the dome, the doctor walked quickly towards the stone tunnel leading towards it. We followed, my rodent snapping her teeth at the terrified old man. Two dancing lights continued to hover above us. As we were about to reach the end of the tunnel, it collapsed at either end, trapping us between two walls of solid rubble. The dust lit by the buzzing red lights gradually settled, and I saw that there were only three of us.
Doctor? Doctor, where are you?
Leela, are you all right?
The doctor's voice sounded a long way off, muffled by the rubble.
I'm going to get you out of there. Stay where you are. I won't be long.
The old man sat, defeated, shaking his head.
That's it, then. He won't be back. He'll just leave us to rot.
He will not. The doctor will keep his word.
Have you still got a hand weapon?
Of course.
Then kill that thing now before it kills us.
There has been enough killing without honor here.
Enough!
The rodent lay on the floor at my feet, her arms held close to her body, her head cocked to one side. I looked into her eyes, into my eyes, and saw fear. A fear I knew. She is afraid.
Of course it's afraid. That's why you've got to kill it.
But she does not fear us. She fears... The wall of rubble collapsed as the old man's metal machine burst through it and crashed to a halt beside us. For a moment there was silence.
Then the door opened in its side and the doctor appeared, smiling.
Come on, you three. We need to get a move on. I've set the controls on automatic. We are going to the buildings of stability.
My car! What have you done to my car?
As the metal machine rose into the sky, we saw what was happening below us. The pools and rocks outside the stadium had disappeared beneath a lake of dark, bubbling water. Large cracks had appeared in the ground, spreading outwards from the dome, water rising in jets of steam from deep inside the ground. The streets were full of Synchronians, running from building to building and away from the rodents who, as the doctor had said, were all heading in one direction, towards the Palace of Tranquility. The old man looked down at the city with horror. The doctor sat beside him, speaking firmly and quietly.
I've been in a self-induced coma, Coordinator Angell. There are only a few things that can trigger one of those. One of them is an attack on my brain at a cellular level. When I woke up, I realized that something was missing.
The old man looked up at the doctor.
My fear of fire, he continued. It was as if that fear had literally been removed from my brain.
Well, of course it has. That's precisely what the Palace of Tranquility is for. Why do you think this is such a peaceful society, Doctor? Because we remove the darkness.
And put it where, exactly?
The Doctor's eyes blazed with fury.
Into the rodents,
I gasped.
Doctor, I too have had my fear removed. I did not realize until I saw it in her eyes just now. In my rodent's eyes.
Exactly. And that's why they have to die. They carry all our diseased thoughts, all the evil, the guilt, the fear, the criminal impulses. And like a disease, they must be wiped out.
The empathy games, said the doctor with disgust. An annual purge of your sins.
He looked round the cabin suddenly.
Leela, where's your friend?
The metal machine tipped to one side. A howl of pain came from the front.
She's controlling the ship, the doctor said, trying to take us to the palace.
How is that possible? It's an animal.
She's acting on instinct, the doctor replied, trying to open the door with his sonic screwdriver. And remember, she's absorbed some of Leela's personality as well. She's very bright, quick to learn.
He smiled at me. But then the machine fell from the sky. We had smashed through the steps at the bottom of the palace. Climbing out of the broken machine, I saw my rodent joining the rest of her kind. We were in an enormous room filled with machinery, which the rodents were destroying, howling in triumph. The doctor gazed at the room, fascinated and appalled. What is this place, doctor? I asked him.
It's a transplantation factory, Leela. The dark heart of Synchronus. This is where the embryo rodents have the fears and darker thoughts implanted. See those spheres? Recognize the pattern?
He pointed towards a large metal shape in the center of the room.
The Distrabicon,
I said, then corrected myself.
The helix of Synchronus.
It's a brainwave distributor,
the doctor explained, though I did not understand his words.
And the observationals are telepathic communication nodes. It's brilliant. Terrifying, but brilliant.
The old man clambered out of a hole in the metal machine's side.
Doctor, you have to stop this devastation. If this carries on, it'll mean
the end of the world.
A rodent stumbled towards us, its face that of the old man. As the two stood facing each other, the doctor ran towards the center of the room and set to work.
That's what you fear, isn't it, Philo Angell? The end of your world. The end of your power, and worse than that, you fear the truth. The dirty, stinking truth. Kill it. Leela, you are my champion. I command you to kill it.
For a moment, I saw through the eyes of the rodent and realized I had entered its mind before, during the selection. I saw myself and the old man stepping backwards in terror. I felt his fear, just as I had felt my own fear back in the pit, and as Bakora had felt the shame of another Synchronian's crime before her first catch.
So many crimes, so much injustice. Is there any wonder I am one of the talkers, when I have so many words to say, so many evils to name? No. Kill it, Leela! Even today, when the waters started to fall,
no!
You could have saved those in the pit. You could have diverted the floodwaters, but you chose not to, didn't you, Vylor? Just in case.
Stop it!
Just in case I survived.
Bingo!
The doctor's voice sounded triumphantly from the center of the room as he flicked a switch. The rodent stopped as all faces turned to the helix, which was pulsating with light. Then, seeming to appear from nowhere, dancing lights filled the room. Like insects, they swarmed around the helix, and then an explosion of light cast them away, each one whirling through the air to land on the rodent. I saw mine, her forehead alight, walk towards me, slowly, deliberately, her arms raised. And as we touched, I felt all her anger, all her pain, all her fear, all my fear, rush into me. She fell into my arms and I saw her face change. Her hair fell away, her neck lengthened, her eyes tightened until there was nothing left of me. I looked up. The old man held a rodent in his arms, its face at peace.
You've destroyed us. You've destroyed Synchronis.
No, the doctor challenged him. This is a new dawn for Synchronis. Your games are a thing of the past. I've reversed the transplantation equipment. The observationals have been dissipated, and you have a new race to share the world with. Two new races, if you include the Cathartics. This is a new dawn for them as well.
But there'll be chaos. Without the games, my people will become a race of savages, evil, twisted.
Angel, you must learn to live with your darker sides, the doctor said. Use your fears. Conquer them on your own. That's what every other race in the universe has had to do. It'll make your people stronger.
Doctor, I cried, what about the water? We must go to the buildings
shh,
of...
Shh, shh,
hushed the doctor. Then he pointed to the opening in the wall where the sky was no longer dark and dangerous. Minutes later, we were looking out across a different world. The waters had destroyed the dark buildings of stability and now lay beyond them, a gleaming ocean stretching to the horizon. A new Synchronis. A new beginning. And now I know who that is. When I was a child, I saw my mother struck down whilst protecting me from a wild animal on Mount Kremnon. I held her as she took her final breath. I protected her body and soul until the first hours of sunlight. I told her stories, the same stories she had told me of Leela, the first warrior of the 17. And though I do not fear death, from that night on, I have been afraid to be alone. Do not be afraid. There is nothing to fear, young one. Nothing to fear. I have stories to tell you. So many stories. Tales of a warrior greater than I, who fought not with knives and crossbows, but with words, truth, and honor. And one day, when we have passed from this place, we shall meet him again, I and you. For we are one. We shall walk with the doctor on a different world, face a new dawn, a new beginning.
Thank you.
coming soon from Big Finish.
Hello? I'm sorry to intrude on you. Is anybody there? Hello?
Oh, I could tell you 100 stories. You don't run a guest house without picking up a few tales.
I think you know the story I want to hear.
Do I know?
It's about a house. A house of dreams and magic.
The doctor, with his long silver hair and old-fashioned clothes. He seemed so ancient, so travelled, so deeply marked by time.
The house is always listening.
Is anyone there? Doctor, can you hear that?
I don't believe in ghosts.